Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is your gardening show that you're listening to every Saturday morning. Welcome back. We had a great first hour, lots of calls and gardening questions. If you have a gardening question, you can give us a call at 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. Let us get on with the day, and here comes John Denver. And the dirty word of the day is thatch, T-H-T-C-H, thatch. And in Ireland, they have lovely thatched cottages, but here in Florida, thatch is not looked upon as being good. And in fact, your landscape company may say, you have thatch and we need to take care of it. So what is it, and should you take care of it? Thatch is a layer of dead material and organic matter between the soil's surface, the dirt, and the grass. It gives Florida grasses a sponge-like feeling underneath your feet where you can bounce on the grass, and it springs back when you step on it. You may not know this, but thatch can be beneficial or a problem for your turf. The most common turfs in Florida experience thatch. Those grasses are St. Augustine, Zoysia, Bermuda, and centipede grass. So what are the benefits of having thatch? That's right, I said benefits. It gives the turf more organic matter, which can help to reduce the need for fertilizer applications. It insulates the soil from excessive heat or cold. It helps reduce damage from heavy traffic. It can also help reduce erosion from a heavy rainfall. And then it also retains water, reducing the need for frequent irrigation. So what are the downsides of too much thatch? Too much thatch can block water and nutrients from reaching the soil surface. It is a great place for diseases and pests to find a home. And it will also, you may also see a decline in the quality of turf because it does increase the need for water because it doesn't allow the water to reach the soil. I don't think that's the problem this week. And so it could be compaction for your turf. And it also increases the risk of heat stress by insulating too much heat and not enough water. So what is the cause of thatch? Well, you don't see thatch in new lawns, okay? I once had a client call me. She goes, Teresa, there's a man at my door saying I have thatch and I need to get rid of it. And this was a landscaping company driving through the neighborhood and telling people they had thatch and that they could get rid of it. Well, I said, you don't have thatch. Your landscape, your lawn, your turf is only a year old. So you haven't had it long enough to get thatch. We see thatch in yards that are 5, 6, 7, 8 years or older lawns. And it's because of one reason or two reasons, excessive watering or excessive fertilizing. And then improper mowing can also cause turf grass to develop a thick, spongy layer, making mowing difficult. So if you have thatch, it could be your landscape company's fault from over-fertilizing or yours for over-watering. So to control thatch, follow these instructions. And I have to thank Christine Jackson of the University of Florida for providing these scientific and researched recommendations. So to avoid thatch or control it, you want to mow at the recommended height and frequency. If you're cutting too much off of the blade at one time, let's say you've been gone for 3 weeks and your lawn is like 6-7 inches and you go ahead and mow it down and you've got this big, big long piece of grass there that's not going to decompose. If that keeps piling up and up and up, then you're going to develop thatch because it's not going to decompose quickly. All right. You only want to take a third of the grass off at a time. And even just taking a little bit off every week is better than taking off 3 to 4 inches. So then you want to make sure that you take a soil test before fertilizing. This is recommended every single time. Okay. You do not need to fertilize as much as what we think we do here in Florida. So get a fertilizer test that tells you exactly what your soil needs and what your turf needs before you fertilize. All right, that's the standard recommendation now. Before you do anything to your lawn, get a soil test. And you can get one very inexpensively online or through the University of Florida's Extension Office. So avoid indiscriminate use of fertilizer, what I just said. Use minimal amounts of nitrogen And then you also, if you do have thatch, you can then do aerification, which means taking and digging out plugs of the core of the grass and taking it out. You can top dress with sand, and then proper timing and rates are necessary. So you want to make sure that it's not, you're doing it at the right time of year. Okay. In the summertime may not be the best time to do it. And then you can also have your landscape company use vertical mowers, and it will help get rid of thatch. So the dirty word of the day is thatch, and you may be responsible for it. We're going to be back with your gardening questions, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me 23680. I've got Bill coming up. He's got sand spurs. What are we going to do? We'll let you know here. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. We're taking your phone calls this morning, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text us 23680, and a perfect text message is your name and your location, and that will help me give you better advice, better direction, and we know where you're listening from. So we'd like to welcome all of our new listeners from all around the state. And we've had a lot of you sign up and like our Facebook page. So we do appreciate that. And we're really glad you're with us this morning. All right. So Bill in, Bill in Carabel. Got to find out where Carabel is. We are building on a river lot. And here we go. Let me just make sure. There we go. Excuse me, Bill. I just want to make sure that I have you. And they're afraid of applying any chemicals, but they have sand spurs all over. And what should they do? Well, so sand spurs are
the devil.
Yes, they are. I remember growing up and being a little, you know, girl in the lawn and getting sand spurs, yes. Or walking in the school area and getting sand spurs, and they really are really terrible. But each one of those sand spurs is a seed. Okay, so you want to make sure that you have a nice thick lawn, and then also too, you want to apply a pre-emergent. So Bill, this may take you two seasons, okay? And it's going to start in September, October, okay? And then you're going to do it again in the springtime too as well. And that's by applying a pre-emergent, okay? And a pre-emergent has specific chemicals in it that will keep it those seeds from germinating, okay? And so some of them that you can use are Image, okay? And then BioAdvanced has a season-long weed pre-emergent that you can put down. And you would do this in the fall and then also in the springtime. And I'm saying do it in the fall because we may be warm enough where the seeds germinate during the winter months. But you want to make sure that sand spurs is on the label of any pre-emergent. Now, mowing is not going to keep them down because sand spurs really, the seeds can get down right at the lower level and your lawnmower is going to go right off on them. But the thicker, you can make your grass. And let's see, did you tell me what kind of grass you have? I don't think you did. But you could text me back and let me know what kind of grass. But if it's Bahia, then you want to seed now and put more Bahia grass in there so that it gets nice and thick and it kind of pushes out, doesn't allow the sand spurs to germinate. But it definitely is an issue that if you do use a herbicide in the fall, September, October, and I'll tell you when, then you're going to want to make sure that those areas where the sand spurs are get plugs or new sod.
Okay, so, you know, every morning I wake up and I say, I wake up on the wrong planet because I swear I find something new and I'm like, whatever. Sand spurs or sand spurs? Because I just, because, you know, I'm not an
both.
English. Yeah, I'm not an English major and I spell everything wrong, you know.
Yeah.
Y'all have no clue of what poor Teresa deals with me as a producer and my lack ability of being able to spell properly, okay? And so I'm looking it up, make sure I get it right so she can see it right, and you know. And it came up with both burrs or spurs. And I'm right. Like, I don't know.
There is a weed that is a burr, okay? But I think people mix up sand burrs and sand spurs. I call them sand spurs. Okay, because it looks like spurs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
I agree,
and,
same way.
Yeah, and so that is the common name that we're talking about. I don't have the scientific name right off the tip of my tongue.
Okay,
but it is sand spurs.
Yeah, they both popped up, like both of them. Like University of Florida was calling it a spur, and then somebody else, that's another very smart person, is
probably
calling it a
FSU.
Speaking of FSU, we have Janet on the line. She's got a question for you from Tally.
Good morning, Janet. How can I help you? Good morning, Janet. She hung up because I said...
This is her husband, Chick.
Oh, hi, Chick. Okay.
I can't switch up like that. Come on.
How can I help you, Chick?
I'm interested in crepe myrtles, and I like the kind that just has one trunk.
Uh-huh.
And, but I also like the black diamond, the burgundy black diamond.
Uh-huh.
Is it possible to get that combination?
Okay, so the black diamonds are a new variety. They've been out for about 10 years now, and they're beautiful. I love them. They have deep, dark, almost burgundy black leaves. But they are, so crepe myrtles generally are just a shrub, okay? And they can get to be a very tall shrub, a 40-foot tall shrub. And but the black diamonds only get to be about 6 to 8 feet tall, and they've got usually multiple stems. I have not seen one that is a standard, which means it has a single trunk. So it just may be the way they grow them. They make great hedges, and so you'll need multiple trunks for those. So it just may be the industry doesn't provide a single stalk black diamond crepe myrtle, but I'll find out for you to see. And you can also try and create your own. So do you want a hedge look, or do you want to have a single stalk?
A single trunk.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to get tall enough to give you, I mean, it's going to look really skinny for a long time, and it's only going to get to be about 6 to 8 feet tall. And so I don't know whether you'd like the black diamond, but you can definitely do it to a, all of the other crepe myrtles can be grown as a single trunk. They will get, their trunks will get big.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Tell Janet we said hi.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much. And so speaking of crepe myrtles, we have Lori in St. Cloud. Good morning, Lori. Thank you for listening. She has 4 large crepe myrtles, but they're not the trees. They're like bushes. And they're getting difficult to mow around the base, and I don't want to do crepe murder. So how do I maintain these so they're easy to work around? How do I keep them looking good trimmed-wise? Thank you. All right, so you are just growing them, again, like a hedge or as a shrub. And what I would suggest is that, so you don't have to mow around them, is to make sure that they're in a landscape bed that you can edge around and keep clean underneath it. And then that way you don't have to mow around it. So just create a bed that they're to put them in, and then mow on the outside. So that's the way to do it. Then you don't have to commit crepe myrtle. So that's a good thing. I am so glad we're getting the word out on that. So many people are not committing crepe myrtle as much.
Do you know when I started this job and you started talking about that, we used to, many moons ago, own a landscape company, and my husband was the king of it. Whenever you started saying that, I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like, my husband's been doing crepe myrtle the entire time we've been married.
And so, you know, I've had landscapers tell me, I mean, because there are great companies out there. There's great landscape companies. I know I work with, you know, several that are really good. And so I tell them, you know, not to commit crepe myrtle. And they go, Teresa, if we don't do it, we have our clients tell us, if you don't do it, I'm going to find somebody who will.
Nope.
And so what do you do then? So if you have somebody, and you can keep the crepe myrtle down. I mean, there's different ways you can pollard it. P-O-L-L-A-R-D, a former D-W-O-D, dirty word of the day. And you can do that. You see that a lot in the entertainment, the attractions.
Yes.
They keep the trees down by pollarding them. And you can do it yourself. Just cut each branch that's necessary on the diagonal. Change the location so you're not cutting in the same spot all the time each year. And then you cut off only something that only a branch that is smaller than your pinky and trim it back to the trunk. Okay, so if you do that, your crepe myrtle will survive. But if you're just taking your chainsaw and just hat racking them and you're doing it every year in the same location, your crepe myrtle's going to decline.
I mean, what are we supposed to do? I mean, come on, Teresa, Halloween's coming. We just really got to get in the spirit.
See, that's it. Just save all of your dead plants and put them in the back behind the shed. And then for Halloween, bring them out in the front of the yard where you can put all your sticks out there. And it looks really scary.
Okay,
I love doing that.
That is awesome. That is awesome idea.
You can just have all these dead plants in your yard. Just put the bones in the back of the shed.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and then you be proud of your dead plants at Halloween time. Everywhere else, any time of year,
yes,
you'll get shamed.
Yes, definitely.
1-888-455-2967, or if you're in, you just want to text us, you can give us a text at 23680. And so I'm going to do this right now. I'm going to tell you, you should already have your vegetable seeds for your garden. Go ahead and plant them now. Vegetables that can be planted right now are cantaloupe, collards, and corn. Still have plenty of time for corn before Thanksgiving. Cucumbers and eggplants. You were frowning there. You're not doing corn this year.
You know what? Our corn got eaten up by the worms. Earworms.
Earworms.
And I didn't do anything with it. We plowed our area and corn is popping up everywhere. I'm just like, okay, have fun.
Eggplants, lima beans you can plant right now. Still planting okra, peppers and pumpkins and snap beans and southern peas, squash, tomato and watermelons. So there is still plenty of time to plant. And if you would like to know about seed planting, you can go to our podcast and go back a couple of weeks and you can see all the directions to planting your seeds and listen to the show. And you can also find some great seeds at Gary Bachman's Heritage Cottage. And he has wonderful seeds for you. They're heirlooms. Some of them are rare.
They're gorgeous.
And they are gorgeous. Heritage Cottage. He has a Facebook page, Gary Bachman. Good friend. He's going to be here in October.
I am so stoked about that.
In the house.
Like, I literally was, I had to message him and say, what day are you going to be on the show? Because they want to MC a special event and I'm not going to MC it if you're going to be here.
So you can contact Gary and he'll be here in October. So we're really pleased about that. So flowers right now. This is a great time. Hurricane season, summertime. We're getting all this rain now. We weren't getting it in the springtime or at the beginning of the summer, but we're getting it now. It's a great time to be planting. So you can plant your shrubs and also your annuals and perennials and trees. This is a good time to plant them. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, it's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and we're taking your gardening questions. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. And so this is the week for almost shopping for school, back to school without paying tax. And so, Lizzie, I think they need to have a gardening tax week where you can buy all the plants you want without having to pay taxes.
I agree. I agree. And then here's my thing is that whenever you buy groceries, like the food part of it, as long as it's not prepped food, you are supposed to not be taxed just normally, right?
Right.
Okay. So whenever you buy a plant and there's actual fruit or produce on it there from the box stores, I feel you should not be taxed because it's already producing it and you're going to eat it. So
there you go. I think that great minds think alike.
Okay, I'm getting to Santa's on the phone right now.
There you go. That would be great. And so I had Carolyn, and she sent me a great photo. And Lizzie, I showed you, and it's just a one big. It looks like it's about six feet tall. It looks like a weeping bottle brush that's completely dead. And she said,
it was gorgeous.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. And she said, we planted this bottle brush about 2 years ago. And she said it's been very healthy, lots of blooms and bees, and we've been traveling for the past 2 months. The sprinkler in that zone runs 3 times a week for 30 minutes in July. Yeah, that's a little too much, Carolyn, but we won't talk about that now. And but normally runs 2 times a week. The azaleas and podocarpus around the plant are doing well. According to our lawn service, this happened in 1 week interval between their visits. What is wrong? Can we do anything to revive the plant? A very large oak was removed from this bed, but we did it. We waited a year before replanting. So, Carolyn, I'm so sorry, because it looks like a gorgeous weeping bottle brush. It still has some green on it, but again, I think this is herbicide damage from just normally just spraying, because you have a lot of mulch there in your garden bed, and there's no weeds in it. So that tells me they're doing something in that landscape to prevent weeds. And when you talk about spraying an herbicide, the herbicide is not bad. But and it doesn't kill anything that's brown, like the trunk, the bark, the branches. It doesn't kill. You can spray it on mulch, not a problem. But when you're constantly doing it or do it too much in a certain area underneath a tree or a shrub, that herbicide is eventually going to seep down into the ground and kill the roots. The roots are going to be affected by it. And so it looks to me like herbicide damage. Now, what can you do? Just keep watering it and it should recover. I would probably cut the branches off. It's not going to look good for about 6 months to a year, maybe next spring. But it's something that I would talk to your lawn service about, because air spray, you know, when the drift of the air, if it's a windy day and it gets on your plants, anything that's green, the leaves, the flowers, it's going to kill it. So I think that was the damage. And I'm sorry to hear that. But this is, again, I love weeds now. let me restate that. I love native plants that they look like they could be weeds. They're not your turf grass. They're not the St. Augustine growing, but they're beautiful. And we just need to get back and kind of revision that. But also, too, I'm really against using an herbicide to keep weeds from germinating. It's just lazy. Just go ahead and pull them out. You know, pull them out twice a year, or as you see them, pull them out and don't spray herbicides. So Carl from Maitland, and if you have a gardening question, give us a call. We have some great time left.
Yes, we have just about 5 more minutes left, maybe 10 more minutes. But go ahead and get your calls in now so I can get you on the board.
That's it. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. So Carl from Maitland, he had a huge pencil cactus. It was over 7 feet tall. I love pencil cactuses. It's called, the scientific name is Euphorbia turicale, okay, at turicale. And he's saying it's getting so big that it's falling over in like the wind, from the wind. And so you can either brace it so that it stays up with a really really iron rod, and you can do that. Or you can go ahead and trim it. You can go ahead and prune it to the height that you want it to be. You want to use gloves, because euphorbias, like poinsettias, have that kind of white milky sap that is not toxic, but it can be an irritant to some people, okay? Poinsettias do not kill. Euphorbias do not kill. But that white sap, if you have sensitive skin, can be an irritant. So you want to get your gloves on, clip off the branches to, you know, whatever height you like and the shape you like. And then you do not want to cut it in the middle of the branch. Cut it all the way back to the trunk. All right. And do not take off a lot from the bottom, because they get to be very top heavy and it'll fall over anyway. So keep the bottom portion of the pencil cactus as thick as possible. I love them because they're succulents. They look great in the summertime. And then in the winter, if we get cold enough, the whole plant will turn orange.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really, really cool to see. And so it turns orange in the wintertime. They're also called fire sticks just for that reason. And so, yes, you can prune back your pencil cactus. Now, here's the good part. Any part that you cut off, every single little piece of it, you need to have the bottom area where it's attached to the stem. Have that area, let it callus off, dry it off. Just stick it on a patio, on a tray, on a paper plate, or if it's bigger, just lay it on the ground. Let it callus and heal over for about a week. And then you can pop it in the ground and you can have all as many as you want and give them away to neighbors and things like that. They're not invasive.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's a really beautiful plant. So thank you so much, Carl, for asking that great question. So Tim from Mulberry said, how often should I water centipede grass? And I know I talk about you only need to be watering twice a week if we don't get rainfall. Oh, we're going to go to break? Okay, so Tim, I'm going to tell you how often you need to water. We're also going to come back to Bill in Ormond Beach. He sent me a picture of a Diffenbachia. And so we're going to be back with your more of your gardening questions, 1-888-455-2967. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. This is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. Got a great email from Bill in Ormond Beach. He's a good friend and a wonderful, wonderful gardener. And I love his yard. And he says, what's going on with my Diffenbachia? So he sent me a picture, and it's a Diffenbachia in a pot. But it looks like it's had two or three leaves that have died. And he said, I got this Diffenbachia a month ago. And shortly after the new growth comes out, it turns to mush. No direct light, damp but not wet. He said, so then I asked him, well, does it have drainage in the pot? Because that would account for it being too wet. And he says, yes, it does. So that's not the issue. And he said, it's wet from Debbie. He put it before Debbie came, and this is a tropical storm, not his girlfriend or wife or anything else. So Debbie came through and delivered it, but he planted it in regular potting soil, so it doesn't have that moisture-holding potting soil that you can buy. That's great for clay pots, but it's not so good for plastic pots. And so what I noticed from the photograph was that it was on the ground and among other types of plants. And so I asked him where he kept it, and it was inside in his pool area. And so having the combination of being inside an area that has restricted airflow, pool cages are notorious for the screens for stopping the airflow inside your pool area. And so I think it just was getting a fungal issue. But I noticed it was on the ground too. So you want to make sure that you lift your plants up, that if they're on the ground, that they have good air circulation. And so then he asked if he could add charcoal to a soil, would it help? And it's sure. Yeah, charcoal has beneficial properties. It improves moisture drainage. It provides air pockets for your roots to breathe in that pot area. And it can also bring up soil to alkaline levels. So it increases alkalinity. But it naturally removes toxins and it absorbs excess water, acts as a filter. So adding charcoal to your potting medium is fine. So let's see what it does with a little bit of air moisture. Yes?
Are you kidding me? How long I've been producing this show and I've been showing you pictures of my stuff with fungal issues and holding water, and now, after 3 years, now you're telling me I can use charcoal?
Well, it's not going to stop it if you have all the wrong issues, okay?
Oh, okay.
But if you see, I use charcoal in my terrariums.
Okay.
And that's because it's all sealed up, mm-hmm. and it helps to the soil moisture, and it helps reduce toxins. But
you need to come hang out at my house for one day.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. So C in Winter Haven says, I just emailed photos of my monster Crowder pea vines, all vine, hardly any peas. And so, what's so funny?
That's the best text ever.
It's all vines, and that's what you want with Crowder peas. You want to have, you know, lots of vines, but she's not getting any, not producing any of the peas. And it could be, I need to ask, or just need to just say this, that if you're putting down nitrogen and you're fertilizing it a lot, you're going to get a lot of leaves, but you're not going to get a lot of pea production. Because, you know, peas don't need that much nitrogen. They actually fixate nitrogen. They get the area to have produce more nitrogen, and they hold on to the nitrogen. So you're getting a lot of leaves. That tells me it's getting a lot of nitrogen. You want to cut back on the nitrogen, and then let it kind of want to up the phosphorus and the potassium. All right. So just before anybody fertilizes ever again, get a soil test. You don't tell them, you know, what you're growing. If you contact the extension office, let them know that you want to grow vegetables, you want to grow fruit trees, you want to grow turf, you want to grow plants and flowers. Then get the soil tested, and they will tell you exactly what you need to fertilize with. There is no reason to be fertilizing every 3 months, spending hundreds of dollars a year, if not thousands, and then finding out you didn't need to do it to begin with. We over-fertilize here in the state of Florida. I would say probably everywhere, with people who think they're doing the right thing. They want to fertilize because they think that will be good. But if you don't know what's in your soil, you may be putting down too much or not enough. You may not be putting down boron or zinc or copper or any molybdenum, the potassium, phosphorus, magnesium, you know, sulfur, all of these micronutrients that need to be fertilized with. You're just putting down the nitrogen, and you may not need it. Okay, so get a soil test done before you fertilize, and you'll get so much more. And then C in Winter Haven, just hold back and let it grow and see what happens. We've still got a few more months of warm season for them to produce, so that I think that will help. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me 23680. We have a few minutes. Let's go to Jeffrey in Tallahassee. Good morning, Jeffrey. How can we help you?
Hey, Teresa, I heard you mention last week lemon bacopa.
Yeah.
And I live with some other people on a lake north of Tallahassee.
Uh-huh.
And lemon bacopa has gotten in that lake, and it's like kudzu, way it grows along shoreline.
Uh-huh.
And I have called the University of Florida, some people there. I'm trying to find a way how we can rid this from this lake. Okay. And apparently, as I've understood it, and that's why I'm calling you, that you cannot eradicate it. There is no way to do that. Is that what you understand to be the case, particularly if it gets in a lake?
I would say that you can eradicate it by using an herbicide that is labeled for use by the shoreline or in the water. Okay, you can get rid of it, okay, that way, but you need someone who's licensed to put it in, and one of the products is called Rodeo, and that will get rid of it. So I don't know who you asked or who you talked to, but just to go ahead and, you know, put it down, you're going to get rid of anything else that's surrounding it, okay? So you just want to be very careful with it. But Rodeo should fix it. But I will tell you what I'm going to do, Jeffrey. I am going to contact the University of Florida and I'm just going to find out. I think you can use rodeo, and it will get rid of it.
Well, that if that's the case, honestly, I've talked to a lot of different people and have pulled up websites regarding it, and all I find is that there's no way to eradicate it. And so if you can find anything out about that, I would really appreciate it. I called, I think her name is Miss Gaddis or something like that at the University of Florida, and she did not return a call to me.
Oh, well.
But I have, again, if you, I understand that you cannot get rid of it. Now, we wouldn't want to put something in there that would destroy the fish in the
lake. No. The rodeo is licensed and labeled for use in lakes, and so it does not hurt the fish or anything like that.
And I know you're in a hurry. It's near the end. Is it R-O-D-E-O?
Yes.
Okay,
but you have to have a license, so make sure you get someone who's reputable on that. But let me find out. I'll talk about it next week and tell you a little more. It also depends on the season and also, you know, what time of the year and, you know, correct application of it. All right. Thank you so much, Jeffrey. Let me find out about that, and I'll get back to you, because lemon bacopa in your garden area as a ground cover is fine. And it does, it is aggressive, okay? It's not considered invasive, though. At the time, I want to thank Bill Stengel from Summit Responsible Solutions Studios for coming on, telling us about World Mosquito Day and why we have it. We found out that, you know, mosquitoes spread malaria and that female mosquitoes are, you know, we found out that the female mosquito is the one who bites us. And so it's, you know, just really interesting. But we are coming up all along the East Coast and across the country right now. We're seeing some rainfall coming down from these tropical storms. We've got one coming up next week you want to be ready for. Turn your irrigation system off right now. We don't need it.
Exactly.
And that will be helpful. And then also want to thank Quality Green Specialist Nursery, Dana Venrick. We do appreciate them. Thank you to all our callers today and text messages. We love you guys. We'll be back next week with more Better Lawns and Gardens. Because if it's Saturday morning, you are listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins.
And I'm Lizzie Steele.
There you go. And Lizzie, where can they hear the show?
You can check us out at betterlawns.com, betterlawns.com, and also check out your local stations. And you can catch us on pretty much any podcast network that you use. Just search Better Lawns and Gardens or Better Lawns, and it'll come up.
It will come up, Teresa Watkins. And you can go to my website, and you can sign up for the newsletter, the monthly newsletter. And you get all the information on what to plant in the month.
Yes.
And then Teresa's diet. And Lizzie, you do a little post in there telling us what you're doing in your yard and about the turkey poults and what you're dealing with.
I reassure people that you don't have a dumb question for sure.
That would be great. It's going to be a great week. Lots of rainfall and not as hot of a temperature. So I'm pleased with that. So thank you so much, guys. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. And this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.